Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios. So, on Sunday, the Tennessee Volunteers arrived at Music City for the Transperfect Music City Bowl, which you can hear right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9. And we'll have pregame and postgame coverage as the official station of the Transperfect Music City Bowl. And they tweeted out that they were Nashville's team had arrived. And I sent out a tweet, and Chad Withrow replied to the tweet on Twitter and then texted me and said, I got to come on this week to talk about my tweet. So Chad Withrow joins us, presented by Apple Collision Centers, online at applecollisioncenters.com. So here's what I want to do. Again, it said the Vault Twitter tweeted out that Nashville's team had arrived, and I will have Caroline read the tweet, and then Chad, the floor will be yours for a full open response, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go. I've got the tweet ready also, but I'd rather hear it from Caroline's voice than mine. So Caroline, go ahead.
Jared says, LOL, Vol football has never moved the needle less in Nashville than it does today.
So, Jared, you're a young guy, right? But you were alive a year ago when Tennessee went 3-7 under Jeremy Pruitt. And you were alive when Tennessee didn't win an SEC game in Butch Jones's final year. So can we not recognize that there have been times where Tennessee football has moved the needle less in Nashville because of losing? Because I feel like your main argument is Tennessee hasn't won enough, so they've lost fans. I will agree that they haven't gained fans that are moving here because they haven't won enough, but Tennessee's not losing a ton of fans right now. So this is definitely factually incorrect. They have moved the needle less in Nashville in recent years, as opposed to a season where Josh Heupel, on every publication I read, had the best first year of any new coach in college football. They went 7-5, scored a bunch of points, played faster than any team in college football, and are going to a bowl game in Nashville. Oh, by the way, that bowl game is about to be sold out. Titans games aren't selling out in Nashville, but Tennessee is going to sell out a bowl game in Nashville. So completely factually incorrect on your part.
Okay, here's my response to that. You were on the radio here in town in 2017 when they didn't win an SEC game. So you remember that, and you remember, you know, every day what that was, the other. That coaching search, you want to talk about moving the needle. We could not, and I'm sure you experienced the same thing, because that was back when a lot of people used to listen to that station. And that we could not talk about that every second of the day. I remember the Titans beat the Colts on a Sunday, the same Shiano Sunday or whatever. And we literally did like one segment the following Monday talking about the Titans beating the Colts. Then the only other Titans conversation we had the whole week was on Friday when John Robinson came on the show to talk about the Texans game. And other than that, it was Vols, because it was such a big deal here in this town. Last year during the coaching search, it was in the middle of January, late January, early February. And I thought, you know, this stuff, they're hiring a new athletic director, Philip Fulmer's out. Like, this is going to be big. And I just saw it, how it didn't do anything for us. It didn't move the needle. It was almost like Vol fans were totally subdued. And I look now at the context of, you know, moving the needle as far as talking about Tennessee, or I can talk about Ryan Tannehill for 4 hours a day. The second that I stop talking about Ryan Tannehill, if we talk about the Vols. Now, the Vols move the needle more than other things. Like, they move the needle more than Nashville SC, because nobody really cares about that.
Can we agree that they move the needle more than any other college team in Nashville? Obviously, they don't move the needle more than the Titans.
They move it more maybe than any other individual team, but I would say a big SEC story, like Nick Saban, you know, owning Kirby Smart in the SEC championship game, that I think moves the Nashville audience that is a giant melting pot of SEC fans. That I think moves the needle more than any one story surrounding the Vols right now. And Heupel's won some games.
You're shifting. Hold on 1 second. Let me get on that first part, because you're now shifting your argument, because yesterday I listened to you, and I listen to you guys quite often. Nice job. And for everyone else that's listening to you guys, nice job with that. But I'm listening to you, and your argument was Tennessee doesn't win enough to move the needle, and they're risking losing the mid-state and their stranglehold on the mid-state because they don't win enough. Now, I'll agree the needle moving was a lot more when they were incompetent and because the fans were revolting and because that entire coaching search was a complete you-know-what show. But now that they're competent, yeah, it's going to be more quiet. I mean, last year's coaching search, why did it not move the needle as much? Because no one knew what the hell Danny White was up to the whole time, because they didn't have leaks. They didn't have infighting. They have an AD that's actually competent and can conduct a search without anyone knowing what's going on. If you remember, he was even upset that there was a leak on the day that they made the hire that he had to clean up. That's why it didn't move the needle as much there. So you can't have it both ways. Tennessee won this year more than they have in recent years. They had competence across the board. There weren't a lot of off-field issues. They have an AD that can stay out of their own way. But because they quietly won, they don't move the needle as much. Yet yesterday, you were arguing they don't win enough to move the needle. So is it either one, either win so much that you're winning titles, or be so incompetent that you're going to move the needle that way that just going 7-5 is not enough for you?
So I would argue yes, actually, is that case for big picture. Because I think when I talk about the winning, my theory is this. 10 years ago, and you were here 10 years ago, and you know, I mean, look, you grew up here just like I grew up here. And so you remember, and you're older than me, so you remember like the Johnny Majors transition to Philip Fulmer and the Philip Fulmer years and the championship and everything else. And I contend that if Tennessee football has another 10 years, like their last 10 years, there will be more Alabama football fans. If Alabama has the same 10 years like their last 10 years, there will be more Alabama football fans in Nashville than there will be Tennessee fans. And every Tennessee coach has had a good year. Butch Jones, that first 8-4 year, was a good year. Jeremy Pruitt, people thought was a good coach after the second year. So every coach can have a decent year at Tennessee. It's not going to be an unmitigated disaster. But if the next 10 years are like the last 10 years and Alabama the same way, there will be more Alabama fans in Nashville than there will be Tennessee fans. That's just my opinion.
If that's the case, that's an indictment on a generation that's younger than you and their hipster ways, that they're going to switch teams based on winning. And now suddenly everyone's going to become an Alabama fan. Maybe in 10 years that happens. But again, your tweet was about right now. And I can tell you moments where Tennessee has moved the needle less. I'll also say that Tennessee, go look at the ratings for college football games this past year. In Nashville, 4 of the top 10 featured Tennessee, a 7-5 team, not a team competing in the college football playoff. If you think the Tennessee Vols do not move the needle, and oh, by the way, we both know this, Jared, that was a tweet directed squarely at where Tennessee is practicing this week, and that is at Vanderbilt. That was a shot at the SEC team in Nashville, which we know and everyone else knows, and I know you grew up a Vanderbilt fan.
Oh, Vanderbilt.
This is a Tennessee town before it's a Vanderbilt town, right?
Oh, first of all, it was never a Vanderbilt town. Like, it was never, like, at least in my lifetime. You know, the 1930s, I can't tell you. But in my lifetime, there were always more Tennessee fans than Vanderbilt fans. And when I talk about, like, now, look, Vanderbilt has decayed at a much faster pace because Vanderbilt hasn't done anything to try to stop it. You know, Tennessee has done things to try to stop it. They just sometimes make decisions that go in the wrong direction. But I think Vanderbilt basketball is a very good example of how you can move the needle a little bit. And because of complete ineptitude, eventually everybody just isn't interested anymore. And I'm not saying Tennessee will ever be that. Tennessee football will ever be that. But I do think that kind of the trajectory, I mean, we're sitting here being excited about 4 out of the top 10 games were Tennessee games. I mean, 10 years ago, it would have been 10 out of the top 10 games or 8 out of the top 10 games would have been Tennessee games. And I guess that's the point I'm making, is that it keeps going down, 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 down. It's not all the way at the basement, but I feel like it's going down and maybe a little bit quicker than people would have wanted.
Well, look, we like ratings, right? We like to follow ratings. We like to see ratings when they're good. We like to tout ratings. I'm telling you that a 7-5 team in Nashville had four of the top 10 highest rated games on television. Now, some of that has to do with their opponents in those games and fan bases with those opponents in Nashville. But the fact Tennessee's in four of them shows you Tennessee is still top dog in Nashville, Tennessee. They absolutely move the needle. There have been times where it's moved the needle less. Now, if we want to get into a broad discussion of the demographics of Nashville and how that's changed and all the influx of people and all that, yeah, the city has changed. And there's a lot more, you know, Caroline's an LSU grad. The whole SEC, all the Big Ten, all over the country, the Big 12 is now represented in the city of Nashville. So there's a lot more people here. The percentage of people who follow sports that are Tennessee fans, that percentage is smaller. But because there's more people, I also think there's more Tennessee fans. There's also just more of everything else. Now, I'm not going to argue that this isn't a Titans town first. And if I'm doing your show or we're doing our old show on Nashville radio, we're going to spend more time talking Titans than anything else. But squarely in second place is the Tennessee Vols. The Tennessee Vols, by the way, who in basketball, who you say no one cares about this time of year, sold out Bridgestone Arena. I don't know how many sellouts the Nashville Predators have had in that same arena. Yet the Tennessee Vols basketball team, in a time of year supposedly no one cares, sold out Bridgestone Arena. So trust me when I tell you, having done this for many years, the Tennessee Vols still move the needle in a huge way.
Yeah, but like if Kentucky basketball played at Bridgestone Arena, they'd sell that out too. And we're not going to do 4 hours of Kentucky basketball talk on this show.
Well, I'm not telling you to do 4 hours on Tennessee basketball talk. I'm just telling you that Tennessee is selling out that arena. That means something in Nashville. This is not their hometown, but it is, first and foremost, if you're looking at college fan bases, a Tennessee town. And again, that was a shot at Vandy. We all know what that tweet was about. It was a direct shot at Vanderbilt. You've got Tennessee players now talking about, you know, jumping all over the Vanderbilt field this week. By the way, I would not let Tennessee practice on my field if I were Vanderbilt. That could be a separate discussion. I think that's odd for a head coach in Clark Lee, who I like, who said that one of his main memories at Vanderbilt was having a team come in and take over his weight room where he couldn't even go work out as a Vanderbilt football player. So I think it's weird that's being allowed right now. But anyway, I completely disagree with your tweet. So I'm glad we had a chance to have it out.
I do want to talk about the demographics, though, of the city, because you brought up a good question that I was thinking about and something that we kind of talked about, which I want to get to on the other side. And that's what we'll do. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. I don't know why we gave it out, but I just gave out the phone number. Chad Withrow with us, Outkick 360, presented, as always, by Apple Collision Centers. Again, those are Mark Howard's guys. So be sure to check them out, applecollisioncenters.com. More with Chad next. And we'll get Chad's thoughts because, again, we're not going to have a lot of shows on the Titans situation. We'll get that as well. Stillman & Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. I have some very disturbing news to share with you, Caroline.
What?
Apparently, Joe Rexroad just told me that he's got a 4 o'clock flight home from Tampa tomorrow, so he probably can't do Jared versus Joe tomorrow.
Bummer.
I am very disappointed.
What are we going to do? Well, tell him to reschedule his flight.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's selfish of him.
Very selfish. I guess we've just embraced, we've gone full on the embrace debate models. We got Chad Withrow with us again, presented by Apple Collision Centers. So, Chad, there's a couple thoughts I want to get to on our previous discussion about moving the needle in Tennessee and the demographics in Nashville. But the text line is actually kind of spicy, so I want to get to these. And our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. If you're okay with that, Caroline, please start us off.
One texter says, Jared admitted on air a few years ago that he grew up hating the Vols more than he loved Vanderbilt. All anyone needs to know.
Chad, do you think that I am a Vols hater and that that's where this comes from?
I think that, yes, you are definitely a Vols hater. I think you also typically do a good job of sharing your honest opinion, regardless of that. I'm the first to admit, because I think honesty is important, I grew up a Tennessee fan. I went to Tennessee. I want Tennessee to do well. So, you know, subconsciously, that's probably always going to creep in. I'm not going to deny that, but I can also give my honest opinion on things. Do I think that you're saying that just because you're a Vols hater? No. Do I think that you're a little bit misguided in saying that and that your Vols hatred has something to do with it? A little bit? Yes.
See, here's my thing. I think, to Chad's point there, I'm a tell it like I feel it kind of guy. Now, how I feel it sometimes might be a little crazy.
That's fair.
I understand there are some times that I'm like, yeah, I'm the guy who watched Tannehill took the cheese on it and was like, yeah, Tannehill over Brady, you know, all that kind of stuff or whatever. And I hate admitting that I once said that and thought that. But I would say, like, for people that say, well, Jared grew up a Tennessee hater and so he hates Tennessee, like, I grew up a Vanderbilt fan and I don't care about Vanderbilt. Like, I don't – Vanderbilt basketball – I don't watch Vanderbilt basketball. You know, if Vanderbilt basketball has a good team, I'd probably watch, but they haven't had a good team in, like, 5 years. So I'm not – I used to go to Vanderbilt basketball games when Kevin Stallings was a coach. You guys know I can't stand him. And yet now if somebody were like, hey, you want to go to the Vandy game? Pass. And so I feel like I kind of left that behind me. Though I do carry, I think, a lot of scars regarding the Titans, probably from my childhood into my radio career.
That is true.
I think
you are,
I think,
you look, are quite the Vols hater.
Well, and yes, Caroline, you're right. He is a Vols hater. And I'll say this about that facet of this demographic in Middle Tennessee. If you are not a diehard Tennessee fan, you are a Vol hater. Why is that? Because Tennessee is the dominant team in Middle Tennessee. And when you aren't a part of something, you hate it when you live there. If you were a Tennessee fan living in Alabama, you would hate Alabama because that's all you're going to hear about and all you're going to be surrounded by. So when you're surrounded by something constantly, you learn to hate it even more. So I think that plays into what I'm saying about the Tennessee fan base being so strong here is I grew up with tons of people that don't even really care about college sports that hate Tennessee simply because they went to elementary school, middle school, and high school with so many Tennessee fans, and they find them to be annoying, so now they hate them.
See, that though is an interesting point because I remember, like, growing up here, and I felt that exact way that Chad's talking about. Like, and I remember, like, the Monday, and Tennessee was good, you know, and every year there were, and the SEC was smaller. So there weren't a ton of bad games. Like, you know, now you got to play Missouri every year. And nobody cares about that. So it was like LSU and Arkansas was decent and Georgia and Florida was good with Spurrier. And like these were big games every week and they were fun. And like, yes, Tennessee was so powerful here that when they lost, it was like as an 8-year-old, I couldn't get to the radio fast enough to hear the callers on a Monday talk about how could Randy Sanders have cost Tennessee that game. And I loved every second of it. And now it's like Tennessee loses a game on a Saturday. And because it's more of a pro sports town now, it's like on Monday, that game, you know, forget about that game because the Titans just kicked a field goal to beat Tampa Bay. Or, you know, they just won the Super Bowl, so they're a bad example. They just kicked a field goal to beat, you know, some random team, and everybody wants to spend 4 hours talking about that. And I think that's more the demographics of becoming more of a pro sports town than what we were back in the day, Chad.
I mean, it's a Titans town. I would disagree with you that it's a pro sports town. It is a Titans town, then it is a college football town. But Titans first, then college football. I mean, you could pick your fan base in the SEC. You can pick your fan base anywhere, but you look at the ratings, you look at what people want to talk about. It is Titans, then college football, and then everything else after that. And as far as Tennessee losing not meaning as much, you're right because, heck, when I grew up, I mean, I've told this story a lot, but I remember going to school at Tennessee. I remember beating South Carolina 23-3 when I was a sophomore at Tennessee and being pissed off that Tennessee only beat South Carolina by 20. And then fast forward 5 years, and I'm sitting there praying for any win over South Carolina in football. I think what it's done is it's reset Tennessee fans to the point where they're not going to take it for granted if they're good again. If Tennessee ever gets to the point where they're contending for college football playoff spots or they're really good, they are going to be the most obnoxious, loudest fan base in history because they're not going to take it for granted ever again because they've seen the depths now. And they know what it's like. But, yeah, I'd agree with you. It has become a lot more commonplace for Tennessee fans to deal with heartbreaking defeat in football, and it's not as big of a deal anymore.
I think we can all agree with this, though, because I said this like 2 or 3 years ago, and I think I said it on the show. I definitely said it in private to my dad. Like, it's time for the Vols to be good again. And I mean, not like 7-5 good. I mean, like, it's time for the Vols to be, you know, a top 13 team on the road at Georgia. Game comes down to a field goal overtime either way. Like, it's time for that. It's time for Tennessee to be back in the mix for the SEC East. Like, it's time, right? Like, it feels like it's time. Now, Chad's probably right. The Vol fan obnoxiousness is probably going to be 300% of what it was in the 90s because it's been so long. But, like, we can all agree it's time for the Vols to be good again, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, but if you hate Tennessee, there's no winning in this debate. Because the moment Tennessee gets good, it's not going to be good enough for the Vol haters. Oh, you didn't win the national title. Or, you beat Georgia and Florida, but you didn't win the East. You know, something's not always not going to be good enough. Or, oh, well, yeah, you won a national title. Now it's not it's never going to be good enough. Everyone is going to take delight in Tennessee's failures. And the year that Tennessee over-delivers, they went over the Vegas win-loss total. They did more than people thought. They were fun. They didn't have a bunch of people getting arrested off the field. They don't have a bunch of people academically ineligible, like in years past for a bowl game. They seem like a bunch of good, hard-playing guys with a coach that's likable. They score a lot of points. Then it becomes, well, now I'm ready for Tennessee to do something better than 7-5. Come on, beat someone. Be better than 7-5. If you are a Vol hater listening to this right now, you need to root for the SEC team in this town to win a football game in the SEC more than once every 3 years. That is what will turn the tide. This is a bandwagon town. I don't disagree with you, Jared, that in 10 years, Alabama may be the dominant fan base in this town the way things are going. I watched in 2017 where people who never saw a hockey puck lived and died with every moment during a Preds playoff run, and they jumped on board. And, hey, some of them stuck around and have continued being Preds fans. That's great. You have this huge influx of people in Nashville. If you truly hate Tennessee and Tennessee fans, root for Vandy to do something, anything, win a game, compete, be good in basketball. The two sports that matter in college sports, college football, men's college basketball. Be competent in one of those two and stop worrying about Tennessee in the end of a successful season being 7-5 and saying, oh, well, Tennessee needs to win more games. I'm ready for Tennessee to win more games. No. You want Vandy to be good so people coming into town that don't care about college sports can jump on the Vandy bandwagon, and then Tennessee will matter less. Until that happens, it's not the case.
What else we got?
Well, another texter texts in response to Chad and says, blaming the Vols' lack of relevance on fans being hipsters is the worst, most homerous take I have ever heard on this show, and I've heard someone say Tannehill is better than Kyler Murray. I think that was me. Excuse me for not wanting to watch bad 7-5 football when I can do literally anything else.
First off, there's nothing bad about this brand of 7-5 football. I'm sorry that this hipster that texted you guys doesn't like scoring 38 points a game and snapping the ball every 8 seconds. You can say 7-5 is not good enough, but this is not bad 7-5 football. For the first time in years, this is actually enjoyable 7-5 football. If you want to watch boring, bad 7-5, 8-5 football, rewind 2 years to Jeremy Pruitt's 8-win team. That was a boring 8-win team to watch. Then you have an argument. And I'm arguing that Tennessee is relevant. Now, I'm not arguing that their irrelevance has something to do with hipsters in this town. My argument was because Jared said in 10 years, Alabama will be the predominant fan base. And let me tell you, if that's the case, it will be because of hipsters that want it all right now, that jump on the Bama bandwagon because they simply want to be attached to something that wins all the time. And that is why Bama will be predominant here, not because people are moving here from Montgomery or Tuscaloosa and overtaking Nashville. It's because people are jumping on a bandwagon.
Can I say something that's crazy, too, about that point, which I don't disagree with? But, like, I don't even think Nick Saban cares about Alabama that much. And, like, I consider Nick, like, you know, I wouldn't say that, like, Nick and I are buddies, but, like, I guess I would know him a little bit more than, like, the average person just from being around him a couple of times and, like, in a non-radio setting. And, like, I just don't feel like he cares about Alabama that much. I feel like he's, like, you know, a mercenary. And whoever Nick's working for, Nick's trying to beat you. And then if Nick were to go somewhere else, he'd care about them just as much as he cared about LSU, just as much as he cared about Michigan State. Like, it's just a job to save.
Well, Nick doesn't care about Alabama. He cares about winning.
Right.
He just wins with Alabama.
Which I think is amazing.
He wins despite his own fans.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, he doesn't – now, he cares about the Bama fans that give him money and help with the program and the boosters that are out there. But, I mean, we saw the guy earlier this year – lecturing his own fans at his radio show. And what were those fans doing? Yeah, you tell him, Coach Saban. You get after him, Coach. You tell him. He's talking about you, you morons, when he's doing that. It's hilarious to me that he absolutely doesn't like his own fan base. He thinks that the lowest common denominator of his fan base probably gets in the way, and he tolerates them because he knows that they're one small piece on that machine, that wheel that keeps on turning and wins titles for him. But Caroline's right. I mean, Nick Saban cares about winning, and that's about it.
That is it. So what are your thoughts on the Music City Bowl? And I asked Trevor Maddich this question. How big is a win on Thursday? Because you remember what it was like last year in terms of just negativity and just this feeling like the Vols were going to be stuck in the mud for 10 years or whatever. Josh Heupel did exceed expectations this year. I feel like there will be so, even the recruiting class I thought was positive, you know, a couple weeks ago. How positive would a win be on Thursday? And how would it be bad if they lost in that regard, or is it all house money with Thursday's game?
I mean, I think it's, to an extent, it's a little bit of house money, but it will be terribly disappointing if they don't win in a couple reasons. One, this is the rare bowl game that's a preview and not a review. This is a preview of next year. They're getting back their pretty much their entire offense that's going to be playing in this game. If Cade Mays is able to go and Cade Mays decides to not go pro, they'll have all five guys in the offensive line that'll start next year. So this is sort of a propeller game into next season. Plus, you got Purdue going without David Bell, going without Carl Aftis, their best offensive player, their best defensive player. News came down today. Their second leading receiver is out because of academics. Their top cornerback is out because of academics. This is a game Tennessee should win. If they don't, I don't think it's some, you know, it doesn't kill their season or kill all momentum, just like I don't think a win, you know, gives them all this extra momentum going to the offseason. But what it does is it gives a sour taste in everyone's mouth going into what is a very important offseason of development for this team because of so many guys coming back. And if Jared, if Tennessee is going to take that next step, you want to see them make past 7-5 to contending with Georgia and Florida. This is the type of game you go out and you show everyone, hey, this offense isn't a fluke. This offense can reach even new heights. And you go out and you beat a shorthanded Purdue team. It's that simple in a game that's going to be in front of, I don't know, 70 to 80% Vols fans here in Nashville.
Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, presented by Apple Collision Centers. As always, thanks for jumping on a special day for us since we're off on Friday with the college football playoff. Chad, as always, appreciate you. Happy New Year, by the way, to you and Hutton and Paul and to your whole family as well.
Always fun. Happy New Year to you, Caroline, Ian, everyone there at 102.5 The Game. Enjoy these segments. And, you know, if Joe keeps missing out, Jared, maybe I'll just have to come on and debate you at some point again this week or next. So
maybe that. We need to get Paul at some point in here to get.
We might have to do pay-per-view for you versus Paul.
There may be some truth.
When Paul comes on your show, have the dump button ready because Paul doesn't have the best restraint when it comes to swearing on radio.
That is well documented. Chad, appreciate it as always, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Chad Withrow joining us again, presented by Apple Collision Centers. Boy, I got to tell you, some of these texts in the text line, I mean, I was reading them during the break and I was like kind of laughing out loud.
Can I read one that we didn't get to get to, but is hilarious enough to talk about?
Sure. Hal Gill already doesn't like me enough, so it's fine.
He likes me, so just blame it on me. True. Honestly, Nashville is more of a Belmont and Lipscomb town than it is Vandy or Tennessee. The Vols are considered the worst team in the SEC.
Signed Joe Rexroad. Joe Rexroad, basketball Benny. What do you mean you don't want to talk about Lipscomb and Belmont at 8:30 in the morning? You're right. I don't want to talk about Lipscomb and Belmont. No disrespect to Lipscomb or Belmont. At 8:30 in the morning, I'm sorry, but Lenny Acuff basketball just doesn't do it for me.
As wonderful as they are, I don't know if I would necessarily call Nashville a Lipscomb town.
Look, those were my old neighbors, Lipscomb and Belmont. I lived right over there. So, like, you know, but, I mean, come on now. Hal Gill, the Predators are actually going to play hockey tomorrow because they're in Washington, D.C. He'll join us next. Kind of, what's this been like? I can't remember the last time they played hockey. But the last time they did play hockey, they won a bunch of games. So Hal Gill will join us coming up next. Invigorate Health, who's trying to lose weight? That's right. Who's got a New Year's resolution? Now that your holiday cookies and cakes and everything else are in the background, who's thinking about, man, I have got to find a way to lose weight? And you've tried and tried and tried and nothing has happened. Well, this is where semaglutide comes into effect. And semaglutide is carried exclusively at Invigorate Health with two area locations, one in Mount Juliet, one in Franklin. What is semaglutide? It is a safe drug that has been used for years and has been prescribed to diabetics. And now it has been approved by the FDA for weight loss. That's right. Semaglutide can help you lose weight. It is an appetite suppressant that will keep you from eating the extra calories that have kept you overweight your entire life. So if you've been struggling with it, talk to your doctor, but give Invigorate Health a call. It's really simple. Those are my guys at Invigorate Health. They know all about semaglutide because a lot of them have used it, and they know exactly what the effects are. It is a breakthrough drug. Men's Health Magazine hailed it as a breakthrough that helps people gain more healthy years of healthy life. Give them a call, 615-288-4777 or invigoratehealthtn.com. That's 615-288-4777 and get on your path to weight loss today. Stillman & Company, we are delivered by TriStar Moving right here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Let me tell all the fine folks out there, because I have not told people yet, that you can, I think I have told all these people all these things.
Woohoo! Crazy. We're done.
No, I haven't. When the Preds have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game. Next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45 a.m. It's been forever since the Predators kept winning hockey games out of their rear end. COVID has just absolutely wrecked the NHL. The Predators, though, back on the road, taking on Peter Laviolette and the Washington Capitals tomorrow night. That coverage will start right here at 5 o'clock. Hal Gill joins us on the program as he normally does on Tuesdays. So, Hal, obviously you had a break just like everybody else did. You travel with the team. So what was kind of the break like to try to reset to get everybody right for COVID? And how hard was it to manage that as you guys hit the road today to go to Washington to get, you know, essentially hockey life back underway?
Yeah, still lots of testing going on. That's one thing we're consistent with is lots of tests and quicker results. So I haven't heard any new cases as of yet, but it's always a fluid situation. So right now it looks good. We're in D.C. and we're ready to play, and hopefully this goes off without a hitch.
So what was this like when they said, okay, we're going to pause, you know, and the Predators kind of got to it a little bit earlier because it's been about 2 weeks since the Preds have had a game. And so was it like, hey, guys, players and people like you, was it like, guys, we need you to basically stay at home for 2 weeks and not do anything and not get infected and not, or did you just live like a normal life and just figured, you know what, when I get back to when they open the arena back up or Centennial or whatever it is, I'm going to get my nose poked. And if I get my nose poked, I'm not going to Washington. And if it comes back negative, then I'm going to Washington. Like, how did you approach all that?
Yeah, I think it's, for the most part, it's under the honor system, right? It's, try to live life the right way, get into small circles. You know, obviously you're not going to be bouncing around in bars. You want to make sure that everyone is healthy and you're not passing along this whole thing, because it seems to be ripping through the NHL pretty quick. And a lot of it, you know, I know the NFL is trying to go without the testing. The NHL wants to do the same thing. I think Canada has a lot to say about that, and Canada is a different situation. So with the NHL being a big part of the deal and Canada being a big part of how we're going to operate, we have to follow their guidelines as well. So, you know, it's locked down as much as you can and try to get through this, but it's a frustrating thing. I know for the players, they feel fine, and then all of a sudden they test positive and you're gone for 10 days. And, you know, as I said, a fluid situation, so I think a lot of these rules are going to change, and we're just trying to keep our head above water and get in as many games before these rules do change.
So when you say the rules may change, Hal Gill's with us, do you think they'll change for the better? Like in the NFL, now if you test positive for COVID, you're basically out for 5 days, and if you're better after 5 days, you're back in there. And yeah, you brought up Canada, and Canada is a lot more, you know, they've been a lot more tighten the ship here than America has in general, and I don't foresee that changing, though I don't know that for a fact. Do you anticipate the rules being easier going forward, or do you anticipate them actually getting harder going forward?
I think there's a lot of the NHL looking around and trying to figure out what the right course of action is, not being foolish, but also they have fans in the stands, and you know we want Bridgestone Arena to be packed and ready to go, and the fans are there and they're ready to go. So I know owners want to make money and they want to have games. So I think there's a delicate balance between saying, hey, we're going to move forward and get past this, but also keeping everyone's health and safety in their sights and not making any foolish decisions. So I think honestly it's minute to minute. I know it's in our broadcast crew, there's been, you know, testing is going to be at this time. Now we're moving up testing. It's going to be an hour earlier so that we can find out the results before the flight. You know, little things like that that they're trying to adjust. But ultimately, I think the NHL has got to reevaluate everything day by day to make sure that if there's a way that they can make these games happen, whether that's a 10-day quarantine to a 5-day quarantine, that makes a big difference. You know, a lot of the players have been through this, so they have, you know, 3 months of carte blanche. They can do whatever they want. And so you look at around the league, most of these players and teams have gone through their spell. And so can we get back to a normal atmosphere, a normal game plan? And, you know, with the Olympics being out, can they squeeze more games in there and make those games up? Because I know the NHL wants to keep making money and keep getting players on the ice.
Hal Gill's our guest. The Predators were red hot before they had to pause it down. UC Soros playing out of his mind. That should translate no matter what. Guys in the lineup, guys out of the lineup. It was happening before kind of the shutdown happened, and there will be guys out of the lineup tomorrow against Washington, including Roman Josi. So, Hal, for you, how much of what they did before they took that pause is going to carry over tomorrow night and maybe into the new year?
Yeah, well, you look at the last two games. Colorado was kind of a mess. I mean, we're looking at two AHL lineups predominantly, and Colorado didn't even have a full roster. You know, you're taking a guy like Makar out, Darcy Kuemper out of the lineup right before the game starts. So that was kind of a mess, and the Preds found a way to win that. And then you go to Chicago with a depleted lineup, and you get Borowiecki out of the lineup right in the last second, and they beat a Chicago team that was pretty much fully loaded. So they're finding ways to win. That's the fun part about this team is no matter who they get, next man up mentality, they're finding ways to plug guys in and win. Even without the coaching staff, the whole coaching staff out, Carl Taylor in and his group comes in and finds a way to win that game. And it's impressive the way they've kind of come around and play a system and believe in that system and find ways to win. So I don't think it'll be a problem to get back into it. I do think there's going to be a problem for every NHL team. They've been off the ice for so long. It's going to be tough to just pick up where they left off. So it's going to be kind of a mess, I think, until everyone gets into a rhythm again. But with the structure that they have and the system that they have, there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to continue this run that they're on. But talk about bad timing to be on a 7-game heater and then have to shut it down for way too long.
You know what's crazy? Hal Gill's our guest here, is that Derrick Henry, like the Titans could have, you know, they could be playing for 4 weeks with Derrick Henry running the ball, and then all of a sudden they go on the road to a blizzard, and the flight gets delayed, and this, that, but it doesn't matter. Derrick Henry will still be able to run the ball. Wherever, whenever, he'll be able to run the ball. I get the feeling with UC Soros that even with this little shutdown, he'll still be the same guy that he was at the start of this season and really threw that heater. And I know that sometimes he's been a slow starter in the past. I feel like that might be behind him. And if there's anything that I could bank to right now with, to your point, going to be sloppy play and guys not in shape and guys not playing together, if you've got the best goaltending, that may be what carries you over the top while all this crap's going on around it. I mean, do you expect that from Soros starting tomorrow night, but continuing on the fact that he's been pretty rock solid in net? Because I am assuming that he's going to keep playing great in net while all this other stuff happens.
Yeah, well, the thing about Saros, and I I'm not super into the goaltending finesse, but I talked to, you talk to Chris Mason, and he'll tell you all about. he's right next to me waving. He's proud. He's proud that I give him a shout out. But you talk to Mason, and he'll tell you about the technical side of Saros and how he relies on his angles and his positioning so much. That's not, that's not being in a rhythm. That's just being good at what you do. Mm-hmm. And I think you take a guy like him who can count on that, and he can translate that into wins. I think that's a huge part of his game. He's been more athletic, I think, in this year. I think he's a little more comfortable in his position and is willing to make those athletic saves. But he's been so rock solid on his mechanics and getting across the crease and being quick in that regard and being so technically sound that I think he can pick up where he left off. As a player, it's a little different where you need to feel it. You need your hands to come around. You need your legs going. As a goalie, I think you can rely on that technical side a little bit more. So I think that in the end, goaltending always wins games, and especially when you've got guys out of the lineup, you're going to need timely saves, and Juice has given them that. And so there's no reason why he can't go out and keep doing it.
Hal Gill, tomorrow night, the Predators are back at it. He'll be right here, 6 o'clock, as the Preds take on Peter Laviolette and the Washington Capitals. Harold, appreciate it. Have a good time. Tell C. Mace I said, hey, take good care of yourself, and I'll tell Caroline that you said hi for you. How about that?
No, I need to tell Caroline. I need to say hi. Hi, Caroline.
Hey, Hal. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I hope everything's well with you.
Hal, Happy New Year.
Why do I need to be careful wishing Hal a Happy New Year?
Because sometimes Hal, oversteps his boundaries, and I just, want to make sure he has a regular New Year.
We'll bring it in the right way. We'll bring
good
it in
old
the
average
right way.
New Year.
There you go.
It's going to be a good one, guys. Cheers.
Yep. Hal Gill on the road with the Predators. And I got to say this. I would be scared to death if I was traveling with the team.
Uh-huh.
Because even though anybody can get this and anybody can give this to anybody, like the guy who got me sick, he was really apologetic like last year when I got it. And he didn't try, but I'd be scared to death to be the one that it's like, oh yeah, you're the one that got the whole team.
You're the one that started it all. But you have a risk walking outside of your front door every single day.
So one of my friends is hosting one of the New Year's things.
Oh, nice.
Like the CBS New
Year's. Yeah.
So one of my friends is hosting that, and she invited me over to their house, her family and her husband's family, they are getting together for Christmas. And they invited me over because they know, I'm the one Jewish guy on Christmas. And so, I was really glad to go. But then I was worried because it's like, if I have COVID and don't know that I have COVID and give her COVID, then she's not going to be hosting the New Year's special on CBS. And I didn't want to do that. So then I got really nervous.
Did you go?
I did go.
Okay, good.
And as of right now, knock on wood, but there have been no
issues. Keep my fingers crossed for you and her.
No issues. Caroline's is next. Stillman & Company. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company, it's time now for Caroline's.
And on the action, put the money on the mahogany. What's on tap on the sports books? It's time to break it all down with Caroline's here on Stillman & Company
on ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Now, the Holiday Bowl was canceled tonight. UCLA pulling out against NC State. The Liberty Bowl is going on right now. Mike Leach taking on Texas Tech, which will be interesting. But we have the Guaranteed Rate Bowl tonight at 9:15 in Phoenix. West Virginia taking on the Golden Gophers. Give me Minnesota -4.5. So Minnesota's covered 6 of their last 8 games. They're averaging nearly 200 yards on the ground, and they rank 3rd in the Big Ten, 28th nationally in rushing offense. But on the other side, as for West Virginia, they're 1-3 against the spread in their last 4 games, despite only going 2-2 in those last 4 games. West Virginia's won 4 of its last 9, and of those wins, only 3 of them were only a 1-score game. So West Virginia hasn't been too thrilling so far this season. Minnesota is 4-1 on the road. That's one of their greatest strengths and also one of West Virginia's biggest weaknesses on the season. The spread's only 4.5. Some sportsbooks have it at 5.5, but either way, I take Minnesota against the spread.
If PJ Fleck ever going to be the next Urban Meyer like Joe Rexroad once predicted in the Tennessean, then he's going to need to start winning some of these games.
He's more of a Butch Jones than he is anything else.
That's going to do it for us. We're out of here. Moneyline, Chase, and Elijah, that's next. We'll see you all tomorrow, too.